Welcome to Common Sense Care, parenting your gender-confused child with truth and love. So-called affirmative care is the gender industry's one-size-fits-all answer for any and all children and youth who struggle with their identity. In no other area of medicine, psychology, or education is one treatment plan assigned to every person. At Partners for Ethical Care, we believe that each child is an individual and should be treated that way and given the care and support that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome to Common Sense Care. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And today, go ahead.
And today we are talking about boundaries, how to set them and how to enforce them.
Boy, and this is such a big topic because I know from my own experience that sometimes you can have boundaries that are just right, but sometimes you can have boundaries that are too soft and you get pushed in ways that really are uncomfortable. And then you can also have boundaries that are so firm and like a brick wall that they actually impede your ability to communicate with other people and to work on relationships. So there's kind of a sweet spot that you're aiming for. A lot of times kids who come home with these gender issues, announcing that they have a transgender identity, push parents' boundaries in a way that is very uncomfortable. They demand things that the parents are not comfortable doing. And parents sometimes bend over and give in to the demands of kids. Sometimes they put up that brick wall and say, absolutely nothing. I'm not going to do anything that you want me to do. And so trying to negotiate that is really important. And there probably is not a one size fits all, but let's just talk a little bit about boundaries and how they can help you when your child comes home with an announcement that you're uncomfortable with.
Well, I think it's important too that we start out with sort of a definition. Yeah. I'm not sure if everybody really knows what boundaries are or why they're important. I know I didn't really grow up thinking or talking about boundaries. But as I got older and I've read a couple of wonderful books, which I want to put those resources in our resources for this episode, but Cloud and Townsend, I can't remember their first names. They have two books, one's Boundaries and one's Boundaries with Kids. Mm-hmm. And they are so helpful at teaching you what boundaries are and how to set them. But boundaries really, it's just like a fence around your property. And it says, this is mine and that is yours. Here is where my stuff and myself ends and where your self and your stuff begins. There can be boundaries around any number of aspects of your life. You can have time boundaries, how much time you will give to something. You can have property boundaries. How much are you willing to loan your things out, share things? You can have emotional boundaries. How much emotional energy do I have to give to somebody else's problems? And figuring those things out is very personal. But what I have found is as you establish boundaries, you have so much more freedom. Mm-hmm. I personally come from a background of being a people pleaser. I wanted to make everybody happy. And if somebody asked me for something, I would bend over backwards to give it because I thought if they're asking, they really need it. And I want to give that to them. But I came to a place in my life where I found that I was really being a doormat. Mm-hmm. And what I had hoped for was that if I gave what other people asked of me, when I asked for something, they would give what I needed. And I wasn't always finding that to be the facts. Yeah. And I actually had a boundaries coach for a while, a good friend of mine who has really firm boundaries. And I told her, I'm like, I don't know how to say no. I don't know how to put a boundary down. And I would actually call her. If somebody asked me for something, somebody emailed me and said, can you do this for me? And I really didn't want to do it. And I called my friend. I'm like, this person asked me to do this and I don't want to do it. And my friend said, oh, that's ridiculous. No, that's not something you need to spend your time on. How do I say no? And she said, you just write back and say, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me. I can't do that.
Really? Just that easy?
I can say that. Yes, you can. And it gives you an incredible amount of freedom when you learn how to start setting those boundaries. because you know how much you have to give, you know how far you're willing to go. And I've also found people respect your time, your energy, and your resources much more when you respect them too.
And one of the things about boundaries that your friend touched on that I think is important is some people will say like, oh, well, I'd really like to, but I'm busy, or I just have too much to do. I'd really like to, but, and I think one of the things about really good boundaries is that you don't have to make these excuses. You get to just say, no, I that's not something I'm going to do. And that's okay. It's okay just to say no. One of the things that's happening with the transgender movement is they're really pushing people's boundaries, not just parents' boundaries, but social boundaries. They're insisting that people address them in a certain way and treat them a certain way. And actually they're pushing into spaces that typically have boundaries around them, such as safe spaces for women, locker rooms, bathrooms, overnight accommodations, prisons, these spaces that have typically had very clear boundaries about who gets to go in them. The transgender movement is trying to break those down and telling us that we're not okay if we want to stand up for those boundaries. And I think that's probably the hardest thing about setting up boundaries is having people say, well, you're mean or you're hateful or you're not a nice person if you stand up for your boundaries.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a really good point about how the gender industry is trying to break down boundaries. Boundaries are healthy things. Boundaries are there for protection for the person inside the boundary and also to some extent for the person outside the boundary. When it comes into your own house and it's your own child who's demanding a new name, they're rejecting the name that you as a parent gave them. And that's a painful thing because moms and dads, when you're pregnant, usually spend a lot of time working on what are we going to name this child? Lots of names, family names, they have meaning. They're not chosen willy-nilly. Historically, that is a parent's right and privilege to give their child a name. Well, one of the really hurtful things about the gender ideology is that child is really telling the parents, I reject that. I reject not only who I am, my physical body, but I reject you as having the authority to name me. And I hear people say, well, it's just a name. You know, why is that a big deal? But words are important and family relationships are important. And I really see that particular boundary of rejecting the name that the parents gave you as a really hurtful way of saying, I reject you, I reject your authority.
And I think the other boundary that parents really run into is with pronouns, that kids will come home and they'll insist that their parents address them by the wrong pronouns. And kids can be incredibly rude and insistent that parents and others use the pronouns that they want. And if a parent doesn't do that, the child can be really disrespectful to that parent. And again, that's another boundary that I hear parents say, I love my child so much and I don't want this conflict, but this is a boundary for me. I'm not willing to lie about my child's pronouns.
Yeah, I know one set of parents who they're faith-based, they're Christian parents. And they said to their child, you know what? My faith does not allow me to believe that you can have a different internal, your brain can be a different gender than your body. I don't believe that because of my faith. And so you are asking me to do something that I believe God says is wrong. So I have to either choose to offend you or to offend God. Mm-hmm. And I'm afraid with that calculus, I'm going to have to offend you rather than offending God. I thought that was such an interesting take.
Well, and I've heard other parents who aren't religious say, you know, science is really important to me. And you are asking me to ignore basic biology here and accept what you're saying. And this is something that's really important to me because if I decide to reject facts, to reject science, then then there's nothing for me to hold on to. And so I think for both religious parents and non-religious parents, this can be a really big issue. Then there are parents who the kid comes home and says, I want you to do this, this, and this. And the parents say, okay. And they just kind of roll over and let the child rule the roost. And that can be harmful too.
Yeah, it really can. Parents are parents for a reason. Parents have more life experience. Our brains have finished developing, and our children, even as old as 25, their brains have not finished developing. And one of the last areas of the brain to develop is the one that deals with long-term consequences, risk-taking behavior, understanding how what you do impacts you in the long term. That's the last part of the brain to develop. So kids have parents to set boundaries around them. When my son, I'm going to tell a story about my son. I usually try to keep my specific kids out of it. But when he was little, like 2-3 years old, most kids, you take them to the park, they see the playground equipment, they run to it and play on the playground equipment. Not my son. I could only take him to a park that had a closed fence around it because he wanted to explore and to run. And I'd take him into the playground. He would run the perimeter of the fence trying to find the way out. And only once he realized there was no way out, then he was like, all right, I guess I'll play. And then he'd go to the equipment. But that's a very natural thing. We all want to push those boundaries and see how far we can go. But we know that boundaries are there to keep kids safe. And as parents, we should not be abdicating our responsibility to protect our kids just to keep some tenuous sense of peace in the house.
And that's that. The fact that you mentioned that about your son is so interesting, because we know that young children push boundaries, which is why we talk about the terrible twos, because one of the things they're doing is a lot of times terrible twos, they're pushing physical boundaries. They're trying to determine what their capabilities are and what's safe and what's not safe. And the other time is during adolescence, where they start pushing boundaries because they're growing up. They know they're going to have to go out there in the world, and they're trying to figure out how to interact in the world with, you know, in a way that makes sense to them. And they will push and push and push, and they need something to push back on, because if there isn't something to push against, then they just keep going. And actually that's how my childhood was. I grew up in a home where there were no boundaries, and I look back on it and I think, what the heck? I mean, at one point I woke up, I was a teenager. There were cigarettes in the ashtray. There was booze in the room, and there was a boy who was sleeping over, and that was all okay with my parents because there were no boundaries. And kids need those boundaries because they'll just keep pushing and pushing and pushing till they come upon something. So as hard as it is to have those boundaries and to have that push, you know, the children pushing against it and having to push back, they're really important.
Yeah. Parenting is not for cowards. Parenting is not for the lazy. It's hard work. And especially, I think those are two of the most difficult times when you're parenting, is toddlerhood and adolescence. And I heard somebody say once, and I think after raising three kids into the teen years, I think it's true, who your child was as a toddler comes back when they're a teenager. They're basically just toddlers with better vocabularies.
Well, and more opportunities. The stakes are much higher in a lot of cases because they do need a certain amount of freedom. You know, you can't be a helicopter parent who doesn't let your kid do anything because you're worried that they might get hurt. So you have to, as a parent, let them go out there into the world. But then you're, as you talked about in one of the episodes, your home is the den. It's the safe place. And that's where they come, and they need that comfort. And actually, even though kids will push against boundaries, they find comfort in it. Especially kids who have special needs, autism, who have mental health issues or under other underlying conditions that often motivate this development of a trans identity. Those kids especially need a safe place where they know what the rules are and where they know that you're going to enforce those rules. That's actually very comforting to these kids.
They may never admit that, and you as a parent may never see that, at least until they're older and they're able to look back and go, wow, mom and dad, I really am grateful that you didn't let me have my way. But when you're in the middle of it and they're teenagers, they're probably not going to say, gosh, mom and dad, I'm really glad that you set these boundaries because they help me to feel safe in an unsafe world. No, they're going to rail at you. They're going to call you names. They're going to push as hard as they can. But you're right. We know from just the basic understanding of child psychology that those boundaries do bring safety and they need those. So that's why it's so important that, especially if you're at the beginning of this journey with a child who says they have a transgender identity, is to figure out what's important to you and figure out what boundaries you're gonna set. And you need to think about both what you're comfortable with, kind of your own sense of boundaries, and also what's gonna keep your child safe. And there are certain things with this that I might say are non-negotiable. I would not allow a child to go down the medication path if there were any way to prevent that. I feel like that's a non-negotiable boundary with this. Other boundaries are going to depend on you and your child. If you're co-parenting, it's best if both parents can be on the same page. It's really best if you can kind of get all of the adults in the child's life on the same page. Unfortunately, I can tell you now that's not going to happen because the schools and many people in the culture are going to be working against you. But in your family, getting on the same page, are you going to use the preferred pronouns? Are you going to allow a different name? I know one family told their child, you can have that preferred name as a nickname. Mm-hmm. If your friends want to call you that, go right ahead. Your parents are not going to call you that. We're not going to have your grandparents call you that at home. You know, this is who you are. Some people have different comfort levels with that. Personally, I feel like truth is paramount. And you need to not agree with things that are not true. That's where kind of my sense of boundaries would be in this sort of a situation.
And what you've said is so important, but I also think it might be confusing. So mm-hmm. Can you kind of talk about the difference between validating a child, but also keeping your boundaries? Because what if a child says, well, you don't love me because you're not calling me by my preferred pronouns. If you loved me, you would be doing that.
Okay, that's a really good point. Our last episode, we talked about validation versus invalidation and facts versus feelings. It's really important to keep that at the forefront of your mind. Am I dealing with feelings? Am I dealing with facts? You can always validate feelings. I understand you feel that this is hurtful. I understand that you're hurt. I understand that you want this. The fact is you are female. The fact is you are male. I am not going to agree to lie about that. To me, as a parent, it is not loving to lie. It is not supportive to tell someone something that isn't true. Love to me means always telling the truth, believing the best, keeping you safe, and trying to find the path that's going to lead you into the most health and happiness. In the short term, that might not feel nice to you. That might not feel like it's what you want, but I have a longer vision for your future than you have right now. And this is what I believe is best for you.
So Maria, the kids are really good at manipulating their parents. And one of the things that these kids are coached to do is to threaten suicide. And so how does a parent maintain their boundaries when a child is threatening to kill themselves?
That's a really good question. And it's a really difficult question. And I don't think there's a quick or easy answer to that. I think we're going to address that in a future episode, and we're going to try to consult some experts on this. I really hate to get into that today because it is such a dicey, nuanced question.
It is important just to keep in mind that kids have been coached on this. And so, it's one of the most powerful ways to emotionally manipulate someone, because the stakes are so high. And that's why we want to get some experts to talk about this. But again, for parents to know that it's okay to have boundaries on something, even if somebody threatens suicide. And I've actually been in relationships where somebody has threatened suicide if I don't do what they want. And it's an incredibly difficult place to be. But at the same time, ultimately, people need to know that somebody doesn't get to violate your boundaries by making threats. And that's what this is. And so even if, you know, the worst possible outcome happens, it's not your fault for upholding your boundaries. You get to do that. And people can't use emotional manipulation to try and break them down.
Those are great points, Erin. I think we have a video clip from Brené Brown talking about boundaries.
So let's do that now.
Yeah.
What boundaries need to be in place for me to stay in my integrity and make the most generous assumptions about you? We are not comfortable setting boundaries because we care more about what people will think, and we don't want to disappoint anyone. We want everyone to like us, and boundaries are not easy. But I think they're the key to self-love, and I think they're the key to treating others with loving kindness. Boundaries are freaking important.
Right.
And they're not fake walls. They're not separation. Boundaries are not division. They're respect.
Interesting excerpt from Brené Brown. And clearly boundaries are really important, but for people who aren't sure how to enforce them, what would you recommend?
Yeah, that's the tough part, isn't it? I mean, the first tough part is figuring out what boundaries you want to set, but then how do you enforce them? And that's a thing parents really need to figure out with their kids. How am I going to enforce this boundary? One of the things you need to ask yourself is, what do I have control over and what do I not have control over? So like the question of the preferred name, your child wants a different name. And we mentioned earlier, the parents said, okay, at home, we're not going to call you that, because that parent wisely recognized that at home, they have control over that. At school, they don't. So it would undercut the parent to try to say, at school, nobody's allowed to call you that, because frankly, school's going to do what school's going to do. You don't have that control. Now, I do know of a parent who the child wrote the parent a note and said, I will no longer be answering to my birth name. And if someone calls me that, I will not respond. And the parent wrote back and said, that birth name is your legal name, given to you by your parents, and it is what you will be called until you are old enough to change it legally. If you do not respond when you are spoken to, there will be consequences. Mm-hmm. That was the end of it. That it never came up again.
Well, and that's something that parents need to realize, is that there are consequences that can be metered out when children do not respect boundaries, and that it's actually our job as parents, again, to do what we can to enforce those boundaries.
Yeah.
And consequences are a really good one. And it is, there are cases where my boundaries have been pushed by my kids, and I've had to, sometimes you have to be really creative. Like, how am I going to enforce this? And a child might dig their heels in. I mean, in the case that you read, the child didn't bring it up again, but there might be a child who digs their heel in and just refuses to respond when a parent addresses them by that name in an attempt to manipulate the parents. And parents can do one of two things, and they can acquiesce, or they can keep those boundaries firm. It's not necessarily, acquiescing isn't necessarily defeat. Sometimes we need to renegotiate boundaries. Sometimes we need to look and say, well, how important is this? Is this really something that I'm, you know, is this a hill to die on? Or is this something that I'm, some wiggle room? And maybe you can negotiate with your child and say, well, I'm not comfortable, you know, your name is Anne. I'm not comfortable calling you Andy, but I am comfortable calling you A. Can we do that? So there are ways to negotiate boundaries. And then sometimes you can just say, you know, I've been thinking about it, and maybe this isn't that big a deal. And that these are all reasonable options. The important thing is to not acquiesce if it's still really important to you. If it feels like it's a really important boundary to maintain, and you allow it to be broken down, the kid's going to sense that, and they're going to know that they have control. and that they can manipulate you even further. And that's when it gets dangerous, because again, kids need to know that their parents are there to protect them. And if a child is allowed to break down a parent's boundaries, that undermines their sense of safety.
Yeah, it does. Dr. Kevin Lehman has written a number of books, and I think this is in his book, Teaching Children to Mind So You Don't Lose Yours. I think that's the name of this one. But he talked about in there how natural consequences are so effective. And he gave a story of a child saying to the parent, you know, get out of my life. You don't know anything. Leave me alone and stop. Just get out of my life. And then half an hour later, the child came and said, hey, Dad, can I borrow the car keys? I need to go somewhere. And the dad said, I would love to help you, but I'm out of your life. Just those, all right, well, let's follow the natural, logical progression of this and see where it goes. If I'm out of your life, I guess I won't be making meals for you anymore. You know, if you're not answering to your name, then I guess I'm not driving you anywhere anymore. There's a lot that you can do with natural consequences.
Yeah, and it's really important for parents to feel emboldened to use those, because in all honesty, this is a life or death situation. This is not, you know, whether or not a kid gets to wear a skirt that's like below the knee or above the knee. This is a life or death situation. These kids who go down this path are medicalized for life, and their lifespans are often shortened. They've done research that shows that these medical interventions are very harmful. It's not just about cosmetic changes. You know, cancer, heart disease, stroke, very serious consequences here. So we're not talking about something that there's some wiggle room on. It's really important to set up boundaries and consequences to do everything you can to prevent a child from going down that medicalization route.
Yeah.
And we have some questions. Do you mind if I read the first one?
No, absolutely.
Okay, so this is, I can set boundaries inside my home, but what do I do about what's going on outside of my home? How do I get neighbors and extended family to respect the boundaries of my child? And we kind of touched upon this, and I want to reiterate how important it is for parents to understand that if you set up boundaries over about something that you don't have control over, it's not going to turn out very well.
Yeah. And unfortunately, most of the rest of society is not on your side if you are questioning gender ideology. And it can feel like it is you and your family against the whole rest of the world, or just you, even if, you know, the rest of your family disagrees with the position that you're taking. So yeah, Erin, you're right. You have to figure out what do I have control over and what do I not have control over. It may require sort of creatively, a little bit, I hate to use the word deceptively, but sort of quietly cutting off relationships that are unhealthy. Mm-hmm. If your daughter babysits and the family for whom she babysits is supporting her transgender identity, maybe she's just busy every time that family calls and wants her to babysit for mm-hmm. them. It may be necessary to withdraw the child from school.
I was going to say that sometimes you don't have control over what's going on, but you may have control over whether your child does go to school. And if your child is being affirmed in a way that is very dangerous at school, you can pull them out of school. You can homeschool them. You can find, some other situation for them to be in. And kids will often freak out at this, because this is a pretty significant thing to do, but sometimes it's what's required.
Yeah.
Because that then allows you to have control over something that you otherwise wouldn't have control over.
Yeah. There's not a lot of roadmap for this, but what we are seeing from families who have gotten their kids back, whose kids have desisted, many times drastic measures were taken. Trans influences were cut off. Social media was cut off. They were pulled from school. They were severed from unhealthy friendships. It's hard. Kids push back hard. This is painful. This is not easy. And we don't want to make it sound like, oh, just homeschool them. Oh, just, cut off their internet. It's not flippant. It's not easy. But again, as you said, Erin, this is life and death.
And it's sort of the same thing as if you had a child who was very seriously into drugs and they were going to a school. Imagine your child going to a school where they were telling them, oh, it's okay for you to have that drug habit, no problem. And maybe even enabling it by giving them some money to purchase drugs or telling them where to go get the drugs. It's that kind of seriousness here. And I do think that it's reasonable to cut off social media. I've even heard of people who have gotten up and moved. And these, again, they might sound like radical steps, but this really is life and death. This really is about the health and wellness of your child for the rest of your life. And the potential is for damage is huge. And it can be really, really hard homeschooling a kid. I actually pulled my son out of middle school because it was a very different situation, but he was having a lot of difficulties. And I pulled him out for a couple of years and homeschooled him, something I never thought I would do. I was always, 100% into public education. But what I realized is that when I send my kid out the door to school, I don't have any control anymore. When he's in my home, I start to have control again. And we have control over social media. We can turn the internet off. And sometimes that's horribly hard on parents, but that might be what it takes to just stop having internet in your home for a while. And these kind of radical steps often help a lot. It's a lot like deprogramming somebody who's been in a cult.
There are a lot of parallels to cults with the gender ideology. And I think we're going to do an episode on that in the future as well. Deprogramming is the right word. That's what a lot of parents are looking at it as, is we need to deprogram our kids. And I want to highlight another danger that they're facing at school. This horrified me, but I was at a school board meeting in my district, and there was a teacher there from a neighboring district. And he is very much on board with the gender ideology. He runs a GSA club. He's active in local and even national activism. And I was talking with him, and he said, I shouldn't tell you this because we're not supposed to do this. But if I find out that a kid has unsupportive parents at home and doesn't feel safe, I help that kid find a new place to live and find money to live on.
Wow. So enabling
He helps the kid become a runaway.
Which
and we
is
know.
Incredibly scary. Yeah, because the statistics for runaways is not good. It's not good because, first of all, they lose contact with the people who love them the most. And that they're very vulnerable. They become incredibly vulnerable. And so, and the other thing that I've heard is I've actually heard of people in schools calling protective services on parents who aren't affirming. So sometimes pulling a kid out of that school is important both for the child, but also for your for keeping your family together, because there are starting to be cases where where parents are losing custody for not affirming children. So this, again, the stakes are really high here, and it might mean completely rethinking your entire life, but it's worth it. Your kids are worth it.
I think we have one more question. Do we have time for that? A parent wrote, my child is a young adult home from college. He will not respect any of the rules of our house. He's too big to discipline. So how do I enforce my boundaries with him? You have older kids. Your kids are older than mine. So I'm going to throw this one to you.
Yeah, and that is probably a physical boundary that needs to be reinforced. As hard as this can be for parents, if, once a child is an adult, if they come in and are disrespectful to you and will not maintain your boundaries, it's okay to say you're not allowed in my house. And that's a horribly difficult thing to say. As a parent, it's painful to say, I love you, but you're not allowed to come and visit until you can be respectful. But that might be what you have to say. And to make sure you say it with love. And because you do have to protect that physical space, and it can have implications for younger siblings. If you allow a child, an adult child to come home who's being very disrespectful and disruptive, that's really difficult for younger siblings. And it can also have complications for marriages. These can be really destructive. So I think it's okay to say, I love you, but until you're ready to be respectful and not disruptive, you need to find somewhere else to stay.
Yeah. And I appreciate what you said about the effect that this can have on younger siblings. Mm-hmm. I know we keep saying this, but we're going to do an episode on that in the future. because there are some really specific and unusual things that happen among sibling relationships when a child comes home and claims to be changing gender that parents really need to watch for and be aware of. So we're going to address that in the future.
Good. Well, these are really big issues and they're very complicated. I'm going to include a lot of resources down below because I think the books that you recommended on boundaries are really good. I don't remember the author's name, Coach and Townsend maybe?
Cloud and something Townsend.
Yeah. And they are really good books. And one of the reasons they're good is that they help you to identify boundary issues, because some of us grew up with such ephemeral boundaries in our homes that we can't even identify what our boundaries should be.
Right. What's normal?
What's good? What's healthy? When am I being too wishy-washy? When do I have a brick wall? And how do I find that happy medium? And what's our next episode coming up? I like to always give a little teaser.
Next week, we are going to talk about parent support, giving help for yourself and avoiding harm.
Good, because you know, a lot of times this is really hard and we're telling parents to do all these things, but really they need support to get through this. So we'll talk about that next time.
Great. We'll see you then.
All right.
We are not doctors or therapists. We are not giving medical or psychiatric advice, and we offer no guarantee of outcomes. We simply want to talk about how to support and love kids using long understood best practices from the fields of psychology, education, and child development. We're glad you joined in our conversation today, and we hope that you took away something you can put in your toolkit for parenting your gender-confused kids with truth and love.